I
Yeah.
quickly.
Yep, it'll I'll go ahead and I guess I hit start. I think I hit start right as Rebecca joined. So I was like, wait, I didn't remember doing that. Thanks everybody for joining in. We appreciate it. Rebecca, you're back. I think you just need to log in under like your personal email. Maybe it's just saved in the cache. That's funny. That used to always happen with Anthony. Well, hey everyone, thanks so much for being here. We're really excited to get started. We'll get started in just a moment. I'm gonna go ahead and start sharing some of my slides here real quick, and go ahead and present. So we will go ahead and get started in just a second as people are gathering. Thank you so much for being here. I'll go through a few slides, do some intros, and then we will dive right in because we have so much great content to cover today. I know there are a lot of questions from parents and coaches that are listening, and we are here to help with two great experts who have had a lot of experience coaching and coaching their children specifically. So we'll go ahead and get started here. So just some guidelines for the webinar. I know that many of you have been to our webinars in the past, but I did see a lot of new names on the registration. I think that's because this is a webinar for coaches, parent coaches. We've never done a webinar under this topic before, and I know it's really, really relevant because a lot of our soccer parenting members are coaching their children. I coached my children as they were coming up in the game in recreational soccer. And so I'm really excited to present this concept and this content to you all. We absolutely encourage questions. We will be monitoring, I will be monitoring the Q&A. The chat is open and I will go through the settings to make sure they are because sometimes the settings are a little bit tricky with that. So once I go back to not sharing my screen, I'll make sure that the chat is open for everybody. But the Q&A is absolutely where we want to hear from people in terms of any questions that you want to bring forward. And we'll try something new. If you guys want to raise your hand when you ask a question, then that's sort of giving me an indication that you want me to try to unmute you so you can ask your question live. If you want to try to do that, we'll see if we can work that into this webinar. We've never done that before, but I think that'll work pretty easily. We are recording this. I've had a number of questions about that. The recording for this webinar will be in Soccer Parent Resource Center later on this week and be available to our members there. I know it's really hard to be distraction-free, but maybe for some of you, the kids are back to school, you're on a lunch break, you're just getting started if you're on the West Coast and you have a little bit of focus here. Obviously, the more distraction-free we can be, the better experience we'll all have. And I think that everyone's pretty clear on how to use Zoom by now, after all of our experiences the last few years. But if you're having any issues with lagging or anything like that, it's likely because your background applications are open and hampering just the working of the webinar. So really just want to take just a quick second and introduce myself. My name is Skye. I am the founder of Soccer Parenting. We've been at this for about 12 years now, but really focusing the last couple of years and really building up our strong membership site for parents and inspiring parents by inspiring players by empowering parents. And really at the end of the day, what drives us is a love for the game of soccer and wanting to bring that love and inspiration about the game and all of those life lessons that come along with it to kids in their participation. And we know that by giving parents some guidance and support along the way, that their children are more likely to stay involved with soccer and to feel inspired. So that's what we're here to do. And we hope that today, diving into, like I said, this new topic around coaching your own children, that we provide some sincere support to people who are maybe got voluntold into this and are like, what do I do now? I was actually talking to Danielle Slayton yesterday on the phone. She is a former U.S. Women's National Team player. She was a broadcaster for the Olympics. If you caught any of the non-USA games, you likely heard her. And she got voluntold into coaching her four-year-old this year. I was like, well, you should have offered that, but she is very busy. And I said, well, we've got a webinar tomorrow for you, Danielle. Maybe she's here listening. In each of our webinars, we try to tie in one of our value statements, and I wanted to bring our coaching value statement forward for this webinar about coach integrity, that we acknowledge the positive impact that a coach can make on a child's life, and we commit to holding coaches to a high standard of integrity, professionalism, and compassion, so our children feel optimistic about their potential, even in the face of defeat. And I know that that's what brought you all here, is wanting to show up with integrity, wanting to show up as the best coach that you can be for your child and for the other children that you're impacting. So this value statement definitely fits right in. Interview will be available at Soccer Parent Resource Center. Steph, I just realized that your slide didn't make it onto here because I didn't hit go. So let me introduce Steph, and then I'll post all of the information about her into our chat here. So I'm sorry about that. I had created a slide just for Soccer Coach Weekly, but we're so excited to have Soccer Coach Weekly sponsor this webinar. You're kind of getting a sneak peek into an announcement that we'll have next week about a new partnership that we have with them. But really, really excited for Steph from Soccer Coach Weekly to be here to tell you briefly about their platform and about a special bonus for people who are listening in today and for our members at Soccer Parenting to gain access to their content as well. So welcome, Steph. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Sky. Thank you for having me. I don't mind there's no slide. I'm happy to follow that.
I had created one just with all your logo and everything.
I believe you. Don't worry. I believe you. Thank you for having me. My name is Steph Fairbairn. I'm the editor-in-chief of Soccer Coach Weekly. So we've been going since 2007, and essentially we're a resource for grassroots soccer coaches. We go all the way from the novice coach that's, you know, delivering their first session to coaches that have been doing it for a few years and maybe a push for time and need some support. We kind of want to run all of that. And oh, there we are.
I know. I'm like, wait, I really did. Committed to this. Sorry.
You have to prove it. Thank you. Yes, we want to deliver for kind of coaches across the spectrum. And the way we do that is we provide a lot of different types of content. So we provide sessions, and that's, you know, full sessions that can last 60, 90 minutes and get you through, or parts of sessions, so warm-ups, practices, small-sided games, and that you can piece together to kind of work out what your session is going to be. Those are all filterable by theme and age group. We've got coaching advice, so technical, tactical stuff, skills, formations, things like that. Practical stuff, so session design, giving team talks, managing match days, working with mixed ability groups, all those kinds of things. And then soft skill stuff, so working with kids, environment building, building player confidence, all of that stuff that I'm sure you'll be awesome at anyway if you're a parent, because it's kind of the same transferring across. And we do that in a variety of formats as well. So we have articles, audio, webinars, newsletters, an ebook library. Essentially, our principle is trying to make your life as easy as possible, I guess, which is what all coaches need. And there's a variety of contributors on there. We've got all the way from someone called John Allpress, who worked for the English FA, Tottenham Hotspur, down to me, who is just a grassroots coach as well. And often my biggest problem is like finding kids socks to wear, and those challenges are just as important as the big football ones, I think, when you're working in the grassroots game. So we try and address them all in the same way. So yeah, as you can see on the screen, we've put together a 35% discount for a premium membership. If you go to soccercoachweekly.net, we'd love for you to have a look, see what you think. Sky, I'm happy for you to share my email as well, because if there's stuff people think they want to hear about, they want us to do, then we would love to deliver on that as well. So yeah,
excellent. Thanks, Steph. Thanks so much for being here. And absolutely, just use code parenting at checkout to get that 35% discount off your. Oh, is it premium, not premier? Sorry, making so many mistakes today. Premium membership at Soccer Coach Weekly, and that's soccercoachweekly.net. I know Brad's in the chat from our team at Soccer Parenting, and he just put that information out there as well. And Brad, if you can put Steph's email, that would be great. Per her request, she's putting your email out there. So be sure to reach out to her.
Thank you,
thanks so much for being here. Okay, so we have two Greek guests on our webinar today. I'm so excited. Rob, you and I have been friends for quite a number of years, and I think this is the first time I finagled you into being a webinar guest. Is that
Yeah, I think it is. You
right?
finally dragged me on.
Well, I'm so happy to have you here. Rob is the executive director for Matthew Soccer, one of our partners that we're so thrilled with our partnership with them. They're one of our longest, or I think our longest standing state association partnership that we have. Rob also has his United States Soccer Federation A license, his United Soccer Coaches National Premier license, I think it's what it's called, and is aside from all of those roles, Rob brings just a great sense of warmth and trust into the work that he's doing, which when you're in the soccer landscape, it's so important to really imbue those qualities. And so something that's always stood out to him, to me about him is just how genuine he is. And I know that everyone will see that here today. So thanks for being here, Rob.
Thank you. It's very kind of you to say.
Yeah. And Stu Singer is here. He's back for another visit. Perfect to have Stu here because he's a mental performance coach and he's a longtime coach of his children. And so has some really important and insightful perspectives on the whole concept of coaching your children. And we can lean on him as well from a mental performance standpoint and a psychology standpoint for our children as we dive into some of the challenges that I know that we have as coaches when we are working with our children. Okay, so with that, I'm going to stop screen sharing. And let's dive right in. Just a reminder to everyone that I will be monitoring the Q&A for questions if you want to bring them forward. And the chat is open and available to everyone to have great conversations. We hope to have some community building there. So guys, I guess we'll just start out with how long have you been coaching your children? Give us some perspective on that. And because we're going to be addressing a lot of the challenges that we can potentially have as parents coaching children, coaching our own children in this webinar for the next hour, I really want to start the webinar on a real positive spin. And so I would love to hear from you as you give us your background with your coaching with your children. Also, just how, from a positive side, how the experience has been for you. Rob, why don't you go ahead and give it a go to start on that one?
Absolutely. So I have two children, a 10-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter. So I've been coaching each of them for several years since they start at the age of 3 and 4. And for me, it primarily boils down to being a joyful experience. We're all involved in the game because it's fun. And there's so many laughs, so much excitement around youth soccer, and just being able to be a part of that. With your children, to create relationships with your children's friends and their families. It was or I believe it's really a privilege to be to have that opportunity to spend as much time with your children in that positive environment. I've also been fortunate that my first role when I came over to the States, I was a assistant varsity coach that lived with a high school varsity coach, and his daughter just so happened to be the captain of the team. So I've experienced that dynamic, as well as being a head coach that had two parent assistants on a club team. So, been through a few different experiences that hopefully can help today with coaching your own children.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Rob. I didn't realize that was your first experience. Wow, you really dove right in when you came to America. That's awesome. Stu?
Well, I am ages older than Rob, so mine started much, much longer ago. So I would say that my first it began probably coaching my oldest in 2004, probably. And so and still was coaching my youngest up through last month, who is a high school senior. And I would completely agree with Rob in the fact of and especially this summer with coaching her and realizing this is the end of the road for me with coaching her, just kind of taking it in and at this age, we were traveling to different states and spending time in hotels and just instead of like the cost and the hustle and bustle and everything else that goes with it, I just thought, man, what a how lucky I am to be able to spend this time, this really, really quality time with her, and same with the others. And I would just add that especially as youth coaches, our biggest job more than anything is to help children fall in love with the sport. So way before championships and certainly before scholarships and becoming pros, in fact, you know, those are almost just cherry on top of good coaching and good experiences. The biggest thing that we could ever do is make the experience something where it's enough pleasure and fun in it that they fall in love with playing. If they can fall in love with playing, all sorts of different things can happen. But I think all of us as youth coaches should think in those terms.
Yeah. Thanks. I love what you said about like the special time that you got to spend with your daughter on the road. And, you know, that really is unique given time for us as parents when we're interacting with our children in sport. And I wanted to follow up with my previous question with that, like kind of how's it been from your family? Has it given your family like a deeper connection to one another, an identity sort of around the team as well, since it's not just a child playing, but it's also a parent coaching? I'm kind of just curious about that, or quite possibly it's just made things really hectic. I have no idea. But how has it been from like a larger family's perspective, Rob?
I think I touched upon it with regard to the relationships. We moved into a new town when our kids were young, 3 and 4. And a lot of the families that we're friends with and the people we hang around with, we develop those relationships through soccer. My wife jokes that I'm the mayor when I go to Walmart because there's always someone who you're speaking to or having a conversation around. And it really is a great community builder. So I'd say absolutely a net positive for the family. Yes, it's hectic and it takes up a ton of time. And there's certainly sacrifices that you make to be on the soccer field. But those are certainly outweighed by the positives.
Yeah, for sure. Stuart, just more globally for your family as a whole?
I would say that it runs the gamut. There are certainly times where it's hectic slash stressful and it's created, you know, I don't want to say problems, but certainly, you know, it's not all glory. I can say that, but but the other side of it is very true. And I think it does become something that we've all embraced. And, you know, I have so many kids who still call me coach, even though I haven't coached them in years. And in fact, my oldest just got married this past weekend and the photographer is one of my former soccer players. And he's, you know, probably 35 and he calls me coach. He still doesn't call me, you know, so I think, and that is, and I wear it certainly as a badge of honor to be called that. I think it's important to be, you know, that's the why we get into it almost is those development relationships. And so anyway, nothing but I would say overall positive experience with just like any part of life. It has its challenges.
Yeah. You made me think of something, maybe just like a message for the coaches that are listening who are sort of that voluntold, no real experience in soccer, but are excited to go down this path. Like if you could just put a percentage on it, just really quick, like how much is this about soccer and tactics and the practice planning versus how much is this about impacting and getting to know children? You know, just maybe if, and it could be 50-50, I don't know. I'm just curious to you all, as you've thought about this, when we pull back all the layers and especially you, Stuart, as you're like looking back on all of it, like what's really been the most important, if you could put a percentage on that, what would you guys say?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I am looking back on it, but yet the other side of it is my work is to where I work with coaches every single day and high level coaches. And I use the phrase all the time, you know, obviously you have to, having a technical and tactical understanding of whatever you're doing is the entry point, but the reality is what makes a great coach as opposed to just somebody that's setting up a practice plan is the second part, which you said, which is the development of relationships and understanding what is good practices for people and developing trust and all that. Those things are the things that differentiate and good or bad at this point, you can find a training session from, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'll go with Arsenal.
Sure, I can see that behind you.
You can go to YouTube and get a training session. Like having a good, solid training session, including our sponsor today, that is there for you.
Yeah.
Building relationships and trust, and that is the art of coaching. So I don't know the exact percentage, but I can say this, I would put it at higher than 50-50. I would put the art part of it at, you know, 70% of coaching.
Yeah. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's going to change depending on the age of the players, the stage of the season they're in, how long you've been working with the team. But I think what Stu's defined really well is the difference between management and leadership. Management, you get a given set of inputs and you're supposed to come with an output. But leadership is having that mutual respect and trust and belief in one another to follow a vision and really move forward together.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that. And I'm thinking back to even when I was coaching my kids at such a young age, like U5, U6, like you can still layer in those lessons, even for the littles, you know, and things that are applicable to them. But let's dive into the specifics of coaching our children, what we're here to talk about today. So thanks for those insights. And I guess the big takeaway is, like, if you're feeling a lot of stress, the real thing to focus on are the relationships and the connection, and the soccer can come, especially if you're coaching at a recreational level, you know, where the kids really, you know, their needs for soccer might not be as advanced. And it really comes to how we show up as coaches. Let's talk about balancing roles. So conflicts that arise when your child doesn't see you as the authority figure on the field. I remember my son screaming at me when he was about 5, and you know, and I think he said, "Mom, stop telling me what to do." I was like, "I'm the coach. I'm like asking you to, you know, dribble the ball forward. Like, what do you mean? Whatever." And I knew, and I know he wouldn't have yelled at another coach, another person like that. So how do you all handle that sort of when the roles and your child's not seeing you as a coach? Either of you can start.
I'll go ahead. Yeah. So I think that the first thing to recognize is it's incredibly difficult for a child to separate their relationship with you as a parent and a coach. There's no on-off switch for being a parent. You are always going to be their parent. And sometimes there's pieces that spill out from the home, whether they're running late or they forgot their shin guards or whatever it may be. And that makes an impact on your interactions at the field. And so I would say one of the most important pieces you have to recognize is at that moment, they're your child, but they're also a player on the team. And you have to be objective when you're looking to hold them accountable to standards or pre-agreed behaviors, and recognize that, yes, they're your child and you have high expectations for them. But in this moment, they're also a team member. They might be a leader among their peers. They could also be someone who's shy and nervous and uncomfortable in that moment. So do as you always do as a coach and hopefully lead with empathy. Try and take things from their perspective. Understand, and if all else fails, take a step back and say, "I'm sorry. Let's go with a clean slate and start again."
Yeah. Like, Stu, anything come to mind about that? Have you ever run into that with your kids? Similar story to mine. Like,
no, I was thinking about that. I actually don't think I had that exact issue with them in terms of them not, you know, just flat out trying to not behave because they knew it was just dad that was, you know, coaching. But I think a couple of things that are really important, and maybe one from a psychological point that's more broad, is, you know, as Rob said, it is sometimes challenging for a child to be in that setting where the parent is the authority figure, and yet they're most comfortable with you. They're more comfortable with you than they would be with another coach. So what they're really in some ways expressing is, "I'm comfortable enough to say what I would say to you at home." And especially if you're coaching when they're 5, you know, their impulse control is so limited at that point that they're just kind of giving you where they are at that moment. I will say as they get older, maybe even like no older than 7, 8, I do think we had the conversations around, hey, you know, just remember when we're here, I am coach. So if I'm asking you to do something, you have to do it as if you're, you know, I'm just a coach. So communication ahead of time, and not only ahead of time, but probably periodically throughout a season, is also going to be, you know, really, really important step. But I think developmentally, it's important to remember, and I've had so many conversations with parents around this, like parents will say, oh my God, they misbehave at home. And then the school or the coach will be like, no, they're great. And they'll say, it's impossible. They like, yeah, they misbehave at home because they feel comfortable. They know that you're going to love them unconditionally. Whereas at school or at practice, that's not the same experience. So they're the best version of themselves in the unconditional place, or I'm sorry, in the conditional place. And then they're the full self in the unconditional place. However, if you're coaching them and they're 5, 6, 7 years old, it's hard for them, as Rob said, to differentiate those experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, I'd be interested to know how old your son is, but Ryan's asking a question here, advice for handling a situation, just what we were talking about. So advice for handling that situation when your child is misbehaving or goofing around during training. He says, sorry, Ryan, I see that now. I don't have my glasses on. I'm like limited with my reading. U8 level. So 7 years old, misbehaving during training. What do you say? How do you do this?
So I think the best bit of advice you can give to any coach is to get as many assistants as you possibly can. And at the youngest age groups, you should view every child on the side, child's parent on the sideline as an assistant. But certainly when you get to kind of U8, U10, you want at least one, if not two assistants to support you. A big part of managing behaviors is setting agreed upon expectations. So at that first training session, in your preliminary email you send out, that's the time to state, we're going to have a progressive discipline policy. And it's going to be a 3-strike process where the first will be a gentle warning. The second, I might pull them aside and say, can you tell me why the way you're behaving isn't appropriate in this environment and how it's impacting others? And the third, we may sit them out for a portion of the time. And we ask the players why that might be important. We also make the parents aware that this is going to happen. If there's challenges with your own child, so if you feel that at that moment the child won't respond to you appropriately, then it's okay to delegate or work with one of your assistants to help with that disciplinary process and procedure, because sometimes it's just a different voice that's going to help in order to help the child recognize, hey, this is a time when I need to get my behavior back in line.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny. I was in London last month and I spent the day with Nick Levitt, who, Rob, you might know Nick. I don't know, Stu, if you've crossed paths with him, but he is a coach educator and a really well-known global leader in soccer. And I actually went out and trained his son's team during my time there. And Nick is usually the coach. So he and I had a number of conversations. In fact, Nick's been on our platform a number of times talking about coaching his son a little bit. That's come up, little threads of that have come up in our conversations. And that's exactly what Nick said, is that he has all the assistants and he doesn't do anything to do with the rotation of the players. Nick, with his background in the game being so strong, these boys are 13, 14. He really focuses on managing the training sessions, getting them a good quality environment, and then lets the assistants manage the game in terms of substitutions and stuff like that, so that it doesn't become a conflict with his son. So yeah, having clear guidelines around that, I think, is key. Rob, Stu, how do you feel about like the 1, 2, 3 strikes? I know we all kind of have our different ways of managing things. How do you feel about that situation, or when your own child is misbehaving, or kids are in general?
Yeah, I'll just piggyback. First, I like that concept for sure. I think that there are two big parts that Rob pointed out that I would just, again, piggyback or echo. Mm-hmm. Is one is I definitely have had seasons for sure where I was a parent coach and then an assistant was a parent coach, and we would just say, you take mine, I'll take yours.
Yep, exactly.
So if you have that, it is by far an absolute good plan on your part. If you happen to be the only coach, you know, and I would just also echo what Rob said. I think so much of good coaching begins with good communication from the beginning. Having that first initial conversation with all parents, having the first initial conversation with your players around what the expectations are, is just so impactful, so that you're not beginning from scratch when it happens, because it is going to happen, whether it's your own kid, whether it's somebody else's kid. There's going to be that moment where you feel like you really have to have some discipline with somebody. And so doing it up front before anything even begins is just essential.
Absolutely. Kind of related to this is this idea about boundaries, like when you're the mom or the dad, and when you're the coach, and making those really, really clear with people. Natalie popped into the Q&A with a good comment that is that she's coaching, and then her husband is at the practices. He's the parent, she's the coach, and the child knows if I need a parent, I can go to my dad. If I need a coach, I am here with my mom. Any kind of thoughts or strategies that you had for your children about coach mode, parent mode? Rob, why don't you start? Why don't you just always start, Rob? Well, let's just get the cadence.
I think that's what Natalie's provided is a great example of something that you can do, particularly with the younger age players, because there's no matter how dynamic and exciting your training sessions are, there's going to be times where a child needs the bathroom or needs shoelaces tying or just needs support, emotional support in general, and a hug. And sometimes as a coach, you're doing so many different roles at the same time, it's difficult to provide the same level of support that you'd like to as a parent at that time as well. So having the other parent or another guardian there who can assist in that role would certainly be helpful. If that isn't the case, I think you have to recognize at all times you are a parent as well. Your children will remember if there were times where you shunned them or you said, I can't do that right now because I'm coaching. When they're on the team, if they need your help, whether that's they're in distress or they're looking for guidance or support, and trying to balance those two roles is incredibly difficult, and also not to the detriment of the rest of the team. So again, coming back to the start with that open communication at the start, is why is it important for you to be a good member of the team and to recognize that at times I will be a coach. And have the player understand the why behind that question is going to assist you to be more successful in that relationship and hopefully overcoming any of those instances that happen.
So did you run into that when your kids were younger, like stop being coach, stop being mom, but stop being dad? Like, did you have any challenges with that?
They were pretty good about that, I would say, in general. The one thing that I would say is I did, you know, have conversations with them up front. Again, you know, again, communications. It's so important of having them understand, hey, listen, you know, unless there is something that is dire, when we start doing this, I'm coach. When we step off the field or off the court, I'm dad again. Obviously, again, like Rob said, you never step out of that role. If they're hurt, if they're injured, if they're crying, if something unsafe happened or they need you, then you become parent again. And reality is, if you're coaching and you're the only adult there, you become parent of all the players to a certain degree in that regard anyway. But that's, to me, it's a big part is to just set up the understanding as much as you can. Again, the younger they are, the harder that is to understand. And then the one thing I will say, and we didn't mention this in the front end of this, and it is a pure coincidence on this, but Rob actually coached my son.
Heard that story. I did not know that until all of this webinar came together.
Complete coincidence on this, because Sky didn't know that. But But Rob coached my son. And one of the things that I realized was actually relatively early on that me coaching Jackson was not necessarily what he needed. And I don't think there's anything wrong with us who are, you know, maybe we played the sport or we were coaches beforehand, whatever it might be. And now we have a kid and we say, well, I must be their youth coach. And I don't believe that's the case. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. if they can't find somebody or if you want to. But early on, I did coach him. And then at some point I realized I don't think this is what's best because he was very, very, very connected to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like he needed to be disconnected from me and have somebody else's voice. And so one of the other things of this is we need to self-evaluate and say, you know, if I'm coaching, especially my own kid, I should be doing it for the right reasons and it should be beneficial to them. If it's not, then there's nothing wrong with saying I'll step back. I'll become an assistant maybe if you still want to stay involved. Or even say it's time to cut that cord. So I do think that that's a self-reflection that you should probably do year in and year out around it as well.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. That happened to me with Callie is that I coached her for a long time. Richmond Strikers, where I coach, you're not allowed to coach your child in the travel level. So that wasn't even a possibility at travel. But my goalkeeper training sessions were on the field right next to her. And what I found myself doing was like taking a water break with the goalkeepers and watching her and then like extending the water break for 30 seconds because she was on the ball. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so wrong. And then I would get in the car with her afterwards and I would talk to her about her practice because I had seen it. And then once I intentionally asked the staff to put me on a different field, so I wasn't next to her, then she came into the car and it was so nice to be able to say, how was practice today? And literally let her be able to share. So removing ourselves from the situation. I think that's a really good, insightful concept about, and maybe you could even go as far because coaches are so needed. And Rob, I don't know if you can think about like the scheduling for this, but say I'll coach another team as long as we can practice at the exact same times. And we don't necessarily, if possible, have game conflicts. I'm happy to be a rec coach as long as it's not coaching my child, but it doesn't cause any more stress for my family time-wise.
I think certainly at some point, all of our children will outgrow us as coaches. Yeah. And it's important for them to get different experiences and voices and expertise.
Yeah.
The convenience factor, I think, in recreational soccer is the reason that we have mostly parents coach. And there's pros and cons to anything. It's always choice and consequence rather than right or wrong. But as they age, if you've got kind of 12-year-old children who are on a performance pathway or a competitive pathway, that is, as Stu said, really the time to step back and evaluate, is it the right thing for me to coach them in their primary role or primary team? Or can I help them with recreational stuff? Maybe it's an indoor winter team or a futsal team or something like that.
Yeah.
We still want to stay involved. We love our children. Yeah. We love the game.
Okay, so many things to cover. We kind of talked a little bit about perceived favoritism when there's that little stress and the nuance of that. I do want to mention one conversation I always stuck with me with a parent that used to do this with his child to really deviate from when I'm a coach and when I'm a parent is that they literally, he had this little kind of event that he would do with his child. When they got out of the car to practice, they walked a loop around the car and then he would be the coach. They got back to the car, they walked a loop around the car together, and then he went back to being a parent. And I really thought it was a neat little like experiment in bringing a physical thing to the moment of this specific transfer between coach and parent. So I just wanted to mention that to people. Okay, let's talk about this perceived favoritism. So this is the concept of kind of navigating some tension within the team that you're favoring your child over me. And it's more what I'm kind of going through here also might be how the players are feeling around that. So this perceived feeling that maybe the players are feeling that way if you make a decision or they actually are feeling that and voicing that. Nick, when I talked to him, talked about the opposite of this. That he was subbed his kid first. He played his kid more in goal than anyone else. It was like the opposite of favoritism. So that could be a possibility as well. But how do you all manage that sort of perceived favoritism? Has it been anything you've run into or any advice for coaches that might be feeling that? Rob?
I think the first thing you have to recognize that a person's perception is their reality. So whether it's the truth or it's intentional or not, that's the truth that they're living and their perception. And recognizing that there's a reason they feel that way is important. So when we, again, we kick off with our season with our agreed upon expectations, behaviors, what are our values as a team and what are the norms of the team, we then as a coach really need to live those values as best we can. And if we say it's going to be equal playing time, we've got to hold ourselves accountable, but also let parents and those around the team know that they can hold you accountable to those standards of behavior that you've set. Mm-hmm. We're not perfect. We are human. We'll make mistakes. Everything that our children do, there's a tinge of emotion, whether it's pride or not such a positive emotion in what they're doing. So sometimes we're fallible and it will go one way or the other. But the most important piece is trying to take a step back and reflect, as we all should as coaches at the end of each session, is how did I act in that moment? What would I potentially change next time? How did I impact others because of my decision-making process? And was I thinking objectively at that time, or was I coaching with emotion?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I would say that personally, I think I always erred on the side of I positive, that I was much more demanding and much more difficult for my kids than I was for. So I think for everything that I may have done, I think everybody would get to see that I did put a high level of standard to them that I may not have, and maybe even spoke more directly to them than I would have spoken to anybody else's child. That being said, Rob touched on it by saying, like, there is no topic that is more emotion provoking than our children, period. And we have a bias. We will always have a bias to our children. That's built in. You shouldn't be embarrassed. You shouldn't be ashamed. That being said, what it creates is we're not always necessarily the most accurate about what we think we might be doing might not exactly be what is being perceived by others. So I think always self-reflecting, looking back, and if there was an error, acknowledging it. But I would argue most coaches, I think, that coach their kids often. I think I had a conversation with each of them at some point where they're like, "Dad, you got to back off me a little bit." I had more of that than I did, playing them too much or giving them opportunities that other kids weren't getting. And that was my, self-check that I had to do, it's like, am I demanding too much from them that I wouldn't for somebody else?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really good. I mean, what the kind of the layer of thinking that I'm hearing from you all is just, obviously, what we know is so vital to coaching is just reflection. And Natalie's popping in because she's kind of experiencing this, the reverse favoritism that I mentioned with Nick. Her child is like a foot taller than the other kids in this age group. And so she says, I don't want to discourage my daughter, but she's a foot taller than many of the other girls her age. And in 4 versus 4 UA games, she's likely to dominate. So I'm trying to balance reining her in without making her feel disheartened. Any advice for her in that moment? I have a couple, something that came to mind, but.
Yeah, so I mean, without going outside of that environment specifically, one of my colleagues, Tommy Geist, does a wonderful presentation on managing the scoreline. So effectively, you should know 5 minutes into the game, if you're 2-0 up and carrying the ball, you're probably going to have to do something around the scoreline. Rather than wait until it's 6-7-0 and you have to bring players off the field or the other team adds players to, can you provide individual challenges? We had a very strong rec team this past year, and a couple of the stronger players, we challenged them. They used 7, I think they were. So it was, can you make 3 passes before you score? Or can we try and get somebody a goal who hasn't scored this season? And that was their favorite thing to do because it involved all the other players and meant they had to figure out strategically around the game how to get the player in the position and how to get them the ball at the appropriate time. So there's always ways that we can manage it within the environment. Certainly, we don't want to tell a kid they can't score a goal. If the goal is there, We don't want to discourage them from doing the things that are going to help them to progress in their game and have fun. However, there's other incentives that we can provide and challenges that will help them to potentially change their behavior, which is what I view as coaching. It's your interactions, the environment you facilitate, how can you impact a change of behavior on the players? And hopefully that results in a net positive in their performance and or potential.
Stu, anything come to you when you're thinking about for Natalie?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to me is that Rob's really good at this, so
I know
takes a lot of good answers, but I just
okay, we'll let you go first next time.
No, it's fine. What I would say is that I agree, like I would never tell a good player to not be good, let's say, or not, you mm-hmm. know, if you, however, where you can place them, what skill that they might, you know, be, you know, so being a foot taller at this age might be a massive advantage. Then all of a sudden they're the same size 2 years later. And if you haven't worked on skills, now that disparity, just because you are stronger and faster and bigger, is no longer there. So like, can we reframe it as, okay, I want you to do this before you would go to goal, or you're going to play in the back and we're going to make sure that we do have, you know, three passes before we go forward or what have you. So they're never actually saying to them, hey, stop being good or being dominant or what have you. You're just trying to change how they're going to do it. But at that age, they're not going to understand it to be like, hey, you're embarrassing somebody, or you're shaming somebody, or you're touching the ball too much. You're trying to develop them. So you're just kind of trying to come up with ways to develop within that, you know, without saying, hey, don't score a goal if you have the opportunity to score.
Yeah. I love that. I think if we can remove ourselves as parents from the situation and imagine somebody else was coaching our child, would that be okay with us, the way that we're treating our own child? And if your instincts are saying, you know, that would upset me and I wouldn't appreciate somebody treating my child that way, and yet you're doing that, then obviously maybe that's something that you need to consider. I love that idea about, you know, adding in some constraints, if you will, or, you know, some things that have to happen so that if they are physically dominant, they're not just dribbling right through everybody, which would be really easy, but instead they're having to think about developing some skills that they'll need.
One other thing to throw in there is the, you know, the goal certainly at that age is development of all the players. And so if one player is just dominating the ball, then the other kids they're not going to be able to develop. And so it's just an idea of like, the idea is the development of all. So how do I, you know, and it's certainly not necessarily easy, but the idea should be, how do I include everyone so that everybody's developing, and still my kid is still developing, even if they do happen to be the best one on the field at the time.
Yeah, I love it. Let's get to Joe's question here. Stu, I want you to answer this one first. And Joe, I'm going to start just by saying you might, at U10, when it comes to captains, like your selection process for captains is something that you can also consider. U10, it's not U16, it's not high school soccer. So just to think about that with captains. But Joe says, it's my first time coaching my son, U10 this season. He's already mentioned being a captain before the season has officially started. I told him being a captain is something that is earned. If he were to become a captain, how do I communicate to the team that it was genuinely earned, if that was the case? How would you navigate a child's expectations and their views of potential advantages to having a parent as their coach? Certainly being a captain isn't a position just handed to players. What qualities should I be looking for as a coach? Stu, do you want to start there?
I will start on that. If I'm being honest, I don't think you need to name two captains for a season at U10.
Rob, do you agree with that? Can we start with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. So we're really helping you, Joe. You don't need to do it. Mission problem solved. What would you do instead, Sue?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't think that is something that we would need to do. I get that we need Captain Darmband to be on the field for each game. I would rotate. So that's, yeah. But the, so, and I do a lot of this topic on leadership. So people often want to identify leadership with a title instead of qualities. And so for me, if I have a team of, if it's a, you know, U6, and you know, you only have 10 players, 11 players on the roster, or let's say even the U10s, and you have a roster of 12, 13, what have you, is I would talk about, well, what are the qualities of leadership? So when you wear the armband, this is the expectation. And that's the way I would do it. But I would not, I would teach more about leadership and what expectations there are and what qualities make up leadership. But everybody, whether you have an armband or not, can be a leader. And mm-hmm. so we should be talking about that, especially at the young ages, because now we're, again, it's all part of development. And that's how I would approach that.
Yeah, good. Rob?
Yeah, I fully agree with Stu there. I think that the goal at U10 is to get them from baseline to better in all facets of the game and the characteristics of leadership and how they interact with one another. Giving them all opportunities to be successful in that area is so important. And sometimes that might be going up for the toss. Sometimes it might be the person who takes penalty kicks. I would certainly go back to Stu's comments around being harsher on your own children. And I would never put my child in a position of giving them the captain's armband at that age, unless it was a situation where they were elected by their teammates. Mm-hmm. And even then, I think that is better off waiting until the high school age groups, because we're in it for the benefit of all children. And if we don't give players the opportunity to succeed or fail, or at least attempt something, then we never know how good they're going to be in that position.
Yeah. And just when I think about like the tactics of coaching, like coaching stuff, this is stuff that I did really badly as a coach. When I go back and think about like working in youth game, is that I would rotate captains, but I never kept track of who was the captain. And I really would suggest that you actually like get a Duke to planner, get something out to do this properly and actually have a rotation so that you're very fair and equitable around that. Don't have your child go first because then it will be confusing to people, but just even do it in alphabetical order or something like that. That's again, where I just failed to show up organized enough. And those things weren't important to me as a coach. And I didn't think about those types of things, but it is a wonderful opportunity to teach children some leadership lessons about, you know, what it, and to have a conversation about what are the qualities of a good captain and that you can aspire to in the future, you know, and with those kind of framing it that way. So Raphael's asking a question about, and Joe's thanking us, or I don't know if you guys can see the Q&A, but Raphael asked a question that's more general around coaching. One, Raphael, I hope the coach doesn't sit a child if they're not performing well, if depending on the age of them. Yeah, eight, like, okay, this is a good opportunity. But Raphael is saying, how to keep the kids motivated when they're not playing well? So that's one question. And how to keep the kids motivated when the coach decides to leave them out of games or watching from the bench. Let's break this down into two things. Let's first start with, if we're a parent coach, we're a novice coach, let's just say, again, like I think there are a lot of more novice coaches here. What should our expectations be around playing time for children and this idea that if they make a mistake, they should be punished by lack of playing time? Can we just start with that, framing that question, and then we can dive in about how to keep kids occupied on the bench? Stu?
There is no better teacher of the game than playing. So I believe heavily at the youth ages that kids should be playing. I don't necessarily think that everybody has to play down to the minute or second the same exact amount of time, but kids, they're playing to play at this age. They're not playing, again, regardless of what our thoughts are, they're not playing for scholarships. They're not playing to become pros. They're just playing to play at this age. And so in general, my response is that no, I don't, you know, maybe bring them out, have a discussion, but then put them back in. The one thing I can say is that, you know, and I'm fortunate to work literally at the professional level with that, and they're imperfect at that level. They don't play a perfect game. They don't play consistently all the time as pros. So the thought of a youth player being consistently good and doing what we expect because we covered it in a practice on Tuesday night, but they're playing on Saturday, it's already a misplaced expectation. It's our job to teach and coach. So can we use it? Yes. Can we use coming out for a minute or two, getting a breather, getting some water, having a discussion? Absolutely. But I'm just not a believer in we're going to quote unquote put somebody on the bench for lack of performance. Unless it is just being an absolute menace, taking away from the experience from everybody on the field. That's just not the way that I would go with that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm going to keep going into questions. Rob, sorry if you had a good point, but a few just came in. I want to grab them before we end this webinar in a few minutes. Kyle's asking a good question. Kyle, I might just ask you if you can pop back in and say, what level are we talking about? What age and level are we talking about? Kyle's saying, any thoughts on what to do when your own coach's child, so maybe he's an assistant or he's a co-coach, and the other coach's child, he says right here. Here I go again. Age 11. I am curious about the level. If this is travel, if this is rec, grassroots, so it's a paid coaching environment, or is it a recreation environment? That was kind of where I'm trying to get at it. So any thoughts on what to do when your own child's coach is struggling to keep up with the other kid's skill level? U11, so lots of stuff could be happening right now. It says not paid, some travel, so it's more recreational level environment. Rob?
Yeah, great question, and something that happens often. Some of it's going to be down to the dynamics of how teams are selected in the organization that you're participating with. Mm-hmm. Some of them select the coach first, and then the coach will select a travel team, and then below, and some of them they stack rank the players and then find out if there's a coach within that group of players. There's all manner of different things at that age that can be the reason as to why the kid's not keeping up. Stu said it very eloquently at the start. Our goal is to help kids fall in love with the game. So everything you can do to support that child to remain passionate, to keep enjoying it, whether that's in the training sessions or the supportive environment around game day, is the best you can do. If there are better environments, whether that's team environments or levels of play to move that player towards where they may gain some success, that's going to help. It's never easy being the lowest player on the bench. You always want your child to be in a position where they're challenged, but not so far out of their comfort zone where they'll lose confidence. And I'm sure Stu can elaborate on that being a sports psychologist. So I think the first, my starting point there would be to have the conversation with the child is, are you still enjoying it? Do you still want to do it? Is there something mm-hmm. you can do to help you enjoy it more? And then from there, figure out what some potential options are.
Yeah. I was so struck going back to this coaching that I did with Nick Levitt's team in London, just outside London. So this is grassroots football in London. They couldn't have been more diverse in skill level. And I haven't coached in the recreational level in a long time. So I think that this naturally happens in rec. We get a team, it all gets assigned, and there is a big diversity of skill level on the team. And I think one of our real big objectives is to keep the players with a lower skill engaged and positive. And this kind of goes to Cole's question. Stu, I want you to address this because this is like teed up just for you. Because it's kind of like, how do you address and get kids to support players on the team, even ones that might be struggling to keep up? So he says, how do you start to turn the tide for a team who's very heavy into criticism of each other or how things are being done to start transitioning to supportive mentalities? An example is a teammate misses a shot and the first response from most is a comment, how they messed up or how it was a good, or how it was a good try and be supportive. Like, how do you get the team to switch to you messed up to good try?
Which this parallels just a bit with the other question, I think also is like nonstop. I try to break all athletes, including pros, out of the idea of comparison. So if the child, going back to what the previous one is, if the child happens to be last or first, doesn't actually matter. What's just outside of your current ability and making small goals that would be just a little bit above. So that would answer that. But then getting back to the one around what you just said is, you know, it was funny. I was watching a Premier League match this past weekend, and I can't remember who it was. And I just was like, man, the body language on this team is bad. That you could see that they, you know, if they didn't have a ball played to them, they were making all sorts of gestures. If somebody didn't finish, they were, you know, like you could just feel it. And my thought was, that's not going to be a successful environment. And so either leadership is off from the very top, or leadership is off on the field, but somewhere leadership is off. And I always use the phrase, and I will continue to use this forever, is it is us against them, meaning the opponent. It is not us against them. It is hard enough to win when you're just playing against another team. It's almost impossible to win if you're playing against each other and then against the other team. And just instilling the idea that we will all be better if we are in support of one another. And I don't know if there's a better lesson that can be conveyed over and over and over and over again, because you too will be at a point. Let's say you're one of the best right now. If you keep aging up and you keep progressing, you're going to find yourself as not one of the best. Mm-hmm. And you're going to really appreciate when one of the best is in support of you rather than diminishing you. And I just think it's an incredibly important lesson in leadership. Going back to the question on captainship, that we can instill from a very young age.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, thank you so much for your time. I want to say to the coaches that are here, one of the coaches responded, thank you so much. That really alleviated a lot of my anxiety. Like, you should not be feeling, I mean, we understand you're feeling anxiety. Coaching is anxiety ridden in many ways. And we need to try to work through that by having certain perspectives and by taking the time and getting ahead of things and leading. I will let you know that our coach channel that we have in our community forum is open for you all to ask all of these types of questions, just like you've been asking here. If you pop it in at Soccer Parent Resource Center into the community forum and ask that into the coach feed, you know, we will have coaching experts answering those questions. So I just want to let you know, we are here as a tool for you throughout the year. One of the reasons we partnered with Soccer Coach Weekly, Brad, if you can pop the information about Soccer Coach, oh, he just did. Thank you. Brad's thinking right ahead of me. So we want to take the stress away from you about the practice planning so that you can focus on the leadership. You can focus on the interactions. And if you're a coach that doesn't know a lot about soccer, you could spend a lot of time trying to figure out, where do I go to get a practice? And I really, really personally like Soccer Coach Weekly. We do not work with many people because I have such very, very like clear thoughts about what I think the products should be. But this is a company that I think is making you soccer better and is making your life easier. So check out Soccer Coach Weekly and the bonus membership that you get, a 35% discount. And then you can download the practice plans. You can come up with a plan and make things easier. I know that if I were coaching like lacrosse for my kids, like I would want somebody to tell me what to do. So just to give you a tool there. Last minute comments. I know we're just a little bit past our time. Thank you. But last minute comments, words of advice, wisdom, positive comments, sending people off as they're gearing up for a season of coaching. Stu, you want to start? Rob, you can bring us home.
Yeah, I'll just say first, you know, so much credit for anybody that's on the call today. You know, that just tells me you're already headed in the right direction just by spending the time to do this. So credit to you for just being here. And just the last reminder is, I will promise you, it'll be very rare that young players remember a record that they had at U8 for the season. They will remember whether you were a positive in their life. And I would just take that into your coaching. That's the way more important part than the wins and losses.
Yeah, absolutely. Rob?
I couldn't agree more with what Stu said there. Your goal as a coach is to get your kids to sign up for the next season. That is the be all and the end all. And hopefully you can do that by creating a positive environment and giving the right practice environments and game environments. And then naturally they'll get better. So thank you for what you do. We really appreciate any volunteer or anyone coaching to better the opportunities for children through soccer.
Stu, Rob, thank you guys so much for being here. I love this conversation. I just got chills. No joke. I really did, because I feel like we moved the needle here and provided some real help and support to coaches. And, you know, this is a big commitment that they're making in coaching. And so, again, just want to amplify the messages from Stu and Rob to thank you for doing your part to make youth soccer better, for influencing in the space, for making children's lives better. And that obviously goes into families and communities and having an impact there. So thank you, everyone, for taking the time to be a coach. And we're here to help as we can. So thanks, Rob. Thanks, Stu, for being here. Appreciate it. Take care, everybody.